Today marks a turning point in our Lenten journey. Today marks the start of our last full week of Lent, as next week we begin Holy Week. We have also reached a turning point in the Gospel of John, from which comes our reading this morning. Last week, our lesson was from early in Jesus' ministry, also from the fourth gospel. Even early in his ministry, he was trying to teach his followers not only that he would die, but how he would die and why. Recall that his being lifted up on the cross in the humiliation and agony of crucifixion would also be his exaltation and glorification as he was lifted up from the tomb and lifted up into heaven. We also learned of the motivation for agreeing to such a fate. Love. The mutual love of Jesus, the Son, for God the Father, and fulfilling the will of God, as well as the incomprehensible love of God for all creation. For John, theology is all about relationship. Our relationship to God is made known to us in the incarnate Jesus, and how that relationship changes each of us and our relationship with each other and in community. Our lesson today is late in Jesus' ministry, very late. The eight verses preceding our reading today describe Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, what we will celebrate next week as Palm Sunday. Of additional significance is that in the chapter immediately preceding, Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. For the fourth evangelist, this is the event that frightens the power elite and convinces them Jesus must die. For they fear after hearing of such a deed, the world will come to Jesus and they will be unable to stop it. It could be their undoing. They decide Jesus must die. For Jesus, the events of his passion have begun. In 5 days, he will be dead. The crowds surrounding him do not know this at this point. They are caught up in messianic fervor in the frenzy of the afternoon as Jesus rides down from the Mount of Olives on a donkey. Many of those who had witnessed Lazarus being raised are among the crowd and telling us what they have seen. In the midst of all this chaos, there arrive some Greeks who wish to see Jesus. Bear in mind that in scriptural usage, the term Greeks usually means Gentiles. Greek culture, language, and philosophy had been spread throughout the Eastern Mediterranean, from Egypt and Macedonia to the very borders of India, by Alexander the Great some 300 years before the birth of Jesus. And its influence remained strong. Greek was the common language of commerce and scholarship. All of the New Testament was originally written in Greek. The term the fourth evangelist uses clearly defines that these Greeks were indeed Gentiles and not Greek-speaking Jews of the diaspora. They have come to see Jesus. They approached Philip with their request, who in turn told Andrew. Both of these men have Greek names, and as we are told, came from Bethsaida in Galilee, a mixed town of Greeks and Jews. Recall that in John, Andrew and Philip are the first disciples called by Jesus. Andrew leaves John the Baptist and follows Jesus, who invites him to come and see. The next day, Jesus calls Philip. Once again, in the metaphor of sight to speak of being in the presence of God, the Greeks ask to see Jesus, perhaps seeking to become his disciples. Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. We can see here a connection between the calling of the first Jewish disciples and now the arrival of the first Gentile disciples. While we are not told Jesus ever actually met with these visitors, his response indicates the significance of their arrival. Throughout the fourth gospel, beginning with his first miracle at the wedding at Cana, we are told it is not yet Jesus' hour. But now Jesus announces, the hour has come. the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. What those in power were afraid of has now happened. The world, as represented by these visiting Greeks, has now begun to seek out Jesus. It shows us the very beginnings of the future mission of the church to the Gentiles and the inclusion of all people in the promises and covenants of God and in God's offer of salvation. As Professor Gail O'Day writes, this glimpse of that future marks the arrival of Jesus' hour, because it is through Jesus' glorification, his death and resurrection, his return to God, that God's promises for God's people are fulfilled. The future to which the arrival of the Greeks points requires Jesus' death. Jesus' hour has indeed arrived. His entire life and ministry have always been moving toward this moment and the series of events about to unfold. And in the fourth gospel, Jesus embraces his hour with confidence and certainty. There is no indecisiveness or angst. There is no agony in the garden. His comment to be saved from this hour is a rhetorical question, John, not a prayer. Jesus' prayer is, Father, glorify your name. And his prayer is answered in confirmation by a voice from heaven, an utterance heard by the crowd. In the fourth gospel, there is no direct account of the baptism. There is no account of the transfiguration. There's no voice from heaven saying, this is my Son, the Beloved, in whom I am well pleased. Rather, the divine voice now confirms the arrival of his hour and the glorification about to be accomplished. Next week, we will again begin our journey through the memory and the mystery of this incredible gift offered to us all by God in love, and an invitation to join more fully and deeply in relationship with God and with each other. Let us begin to prepare our hearts and minds for that journey. Amen.